Hello, respected viewers. It's George from Ireland, so welcome back to the channel. In this one, I'm talking about the Commonwealth of Nations, formerly the British Commonwealth. I'm arguing that it's worthless and ought to be dissolved. So it's chiefly composed of former British colonies and indeed the United Kingdom itself. There are several members of it which were never part of the British Empire, but subsequently have asked to accede to it. Mozambique, Rwanda, for example. So there are now 56 member nations. So what is it for? Well, originally it was for the white dominions to consult with each other and the United Kingdom. That was the Irish Free State, New Zealand, Canada, Newfoundland and South Africa. You might be surprised because Newfoundland was not a province of Canada in 1949. South Africa, of course, most people were black, but they were excluded from political rights. And it was only after 1947 that India and the new Commonwealth emerged. So in the post-war, it was a shock absorber for the UK, and many Britons didn't grasp that their country was greatly diminished in might and wealth, and that the empire being dissolved, and they thought, oh no, it's just been renamed the Commonwealth. So it was British Commonwealth, but then it's Commonwealth of Nations from, I think, the 1960s. So again, it's just to consult with each other, and it has no power, and seldom has a common policy, doesn't really pull in the same direction, so is almost valueless, and couldn't agree on sanctions against South Africa, though they agreed on a statement saying that apartheid was an unmitigated evil. So people often quip that it's got nothing in common. Certainly not. It's wealth. It's got some of the most affluent nation states in the world, such as Canada and Singapore, and it's got some of the most impecunious, Rwanda being one of them. So surely the Commonwealth ought to do more to assist those who are penurious, and it does precious little. It's got almost nothing in way of an aid agency. There's no commercial or economic aspect to it to promote Commonwealth trade, or sorry, should I say intra-Commonwealth trade. So there were some Commonwealth countries had preferential trade arrangements with the United Kingdom after independence because of imperial preference. And when the United Kingdom joined the European Economic Community on New Year's Day 1973, some of them lost this privileged status. Australia and New Zealand were aghast that they'd been cast aside for the UK's erstwhile foes on the continent. But some Commonwealth countries were able to obtain beneficial trade agreements with the European Economic Community as a follow-on from their agreements with the UK. So there's no visa-free travel within the Commonwealth. There are, on a bilateral basis between Australia and New Zealand, or between the United Kingdom and Singapore, or whatever, between some of the Caribbean countries, but not for the Commonwealth as a whole. So there's a head of the Commonwealth. Now, when the Commonwealth took its current shape, it was agreed that the Queen of the United Kingdom would be head of the Commonwealth for her lifetime. But this is not a hereditary office, so it was not guaranteed that it would pass to her son and heir. Nevertheless, the Commonwealth voted Charles III, he was then the Prince of Wales, would be the next head of the Commonwealth. So it was not inherited, though. It was elected. Again, that's for his lifetime only. It's not heritable, and it doesn't automatically pass to the next monarch, who'd be William V. So there's CHOGM, the head of Commonwealth heads of government meetings every 2 years, and it moves to a different country each time. It's being hosted in Samoa right now for the very first time. So in the early days, CHOGM took a week, and every Commonwealth country sent their prime minister. Now it's down to two days. Quite often they don't dispatch the prime minister. It's the deputy prime minister or the foreign minister. So CHOGM was once considered crucial, but actually Elizabeth II didn't even bother to attend several CHOGMs towards the end of her life. Admittedly, she was ailing. Now it says something that King Charles III, though he's in failing health, cancer-stricken, he has moved a muscle to get there. So the headquarters of the Commonwealth is Marlborough House, London, and that is owned by the British royal family. The last member of the family to reside there was Queen Mary, and she died in 1953, just before her granddad took quarters to coronation. And since then, it's been on long-term loan to the Commonwealth of Nations, and indeed the Secretary-General lives there. So the Secretary-General serves a five-year term. The incumbent is Baroness Patricia Scotland. So she was born in Guyana and she grew up in the United Kingdom. She's a barrister and she was a Labour government minister. Now, her noble ladyship is not the first black person to hold that position, but she is the first female to hold it. There are three candidates to be the next Secretary-General. because Baroness Scotland has served 10 years of stepping down, I don't think there's actually a limit on terms, but nobody's sought more than the second term. So all three candidates are Africans, and one of whom is a woman. And no Muslim has so far been Secretary General, though I don't think any of the candidates going for it are Muslim. One is Ghanaian, one is from Lesotho, and I can't remember the third African country the other one comes from. So in 1991, the Commonwealth agreed the hilariously misnamed Harare Principles, because Chogum was then held in the capital of Zimbabwe. And these were about democracy. It was sickening that the Commonwealth chose to say nothing about the mass murder of 10,000 Ndebele people in Zimbabwe, as well as flagrantly rigged elections in Zimbabwe. So this was racist violence, which was state orchestrated. And the Commonwealth didn't breathe a word about that. There were these very morally high-toned denunciations of apartheid, and the apartheid deserved to be castigated. But why look at a speck in someone else's eye and not a log in your own? So many Commonwealth countries were dictatorships. You know, an Idi Amin was committing genocide against his Ugandan people. Of course, the Commonwealth breathed nary a word because, you know, we mustn't upset good Commonwealth relations. It was turning Nelson's eye to the most egregious and huge scale crimes against humanity. There are military coups in many Commonwealth countries, and the idea that's about democracy is for the birds. Yes, there were some Commonwealth countries that were democratic. There's some Commonwealth countries which were undemocratic, but only South Africa faced action. Otherwise, internal affairs couldn't be discussed. So South Africa was singled out for execration, and indeed, much of it deserved. But it is preposterous that South Africa was to be uniquely held to this moral standard that didn't apply to anybody else. Why was it inapplicable to the other Commonwealth countries? So what does the Commonwealth achieve? I mean, now it achieves nothing. It maybe had a small role in bringing apartheid to an end. It does virtually nothing to help its neediest members. There's supposedly the Commonwealth of Learning. It's a very limited scholarship program. There's no defense identity to the Commonwealth. Just how nonsensical the Commonwealth is proved really from the first moment of the new Commonwealth, as in no longer just white countries. Pakistan and India going to war against each other. And they both had George VI, the head of state. So George VI's right arm should be fighting his left arm. Anyway, so the Commonwealth tried to speak with one voice in international affairs. It did through the 1920s, 1930s. The armies, navies, and air forces of Commonwealth countries cooperated. And they all fought on the same side in the Second World War, except ERA. That's Ireland. We opted to stay neutral. And after the Second World War, the old Commonwealth countries dispatch troops to Korea on that United Nations mission. That's New Zealand, Australia, South Africa, Canada. And then the Far East, when Britain maintained military bases into the 1970s, New Zealand and Australia, they had troops in Commonwealth countries like Malaya and Singapore when they're threatened by Indonesia. But gradually that ended. So some countries have chosen not to join the Commonwealth since they became independent. Myanmar, then as Burma, the State of Israel. Several countries have left. Republic of Ireland, we left in 1949, about which more later. Zimbabwe and Gambia have left in recent years. Pakistan left in umbrage over the admission of Bangladesh, which they insisted was still East Pakistan. So Pakistan rejoined 20 years later. South Africa withdrew from the Commonwealth in 1961 because the process was underway to expel them. But they returned to the fold in 1994. It's a big part of their rehabilitation. There are several countries that could seek to join the Commonwealth on the basis they were once under Britannic suzerainty, such as Bahrain, Palestine, Iraq, the United Arab Emirates, Kuwait, Oman, and the United States of America, but none evince the slightest inclination to do so. So the Commonwealth Games is the only aspect of the Commonwealth that Joe Public has heard of. It's summer sports only because lots of Commonwealth countries don't have snowy mountains, so they can't practice winter sports at home. So Melbourne, Australia was due to host the Games, but Australia's biggest city said that they're unaffordable. Now, it is scandalous that one of the richest countries in the Commonwealth say they can't afford to hold them. So countries which are not rich at all, such as Jamaica, have hosted them. So even if a very affluent country doesn't consider it worth its while to host the Commonwealth Games, then surely it proves that the Commonwealth is past its sell-by date. So it is a useless talking shop. It is expensive and pointless. Commonwealth countries agree on very little. It's not harmful. It's just another form for a discussion. It releases all these statements of the most anodyne worthlessness. So if it were dissolved, would anyone care a notice? Politicians and bureaucrats would no doubt miss their junkets, but the much put upon taxpayer would have the burden on him or her relieved a little bit. It would spare the environment of a lot of carbon emissions and hot air. All these panjandums firing around to chog them. So Commonwealth countries are now asking the United Kingdom to apologise for slavery and to pay assessment. Now, in case nobody noticed, the British Prime Minister, Tony Blair, he apologised for slavery in 2006. So anyway, London says there should be no further apology and no reparatory payments shall be forthcoming. So the Commonwealth is going to agree to disagree as usual. It can't take any action apart from expel a country. And as I say, it's actually never done so. So what happened with Republic of Ireland leaving is the Commonwealth heads of government meeting was then in Canada. And the aide-de-camp to the Governor General of Canada was a unionist from Northern Ireland. And supposedly there was some contretemps between him, John A. Costello, the Taoiseach, as in the Prime Minister of Ireland. And then Costello calls an impromptu press conference and announced that the Republic of Ireland, we weren't a republic in those days, was leaving. Because back then, George VI was the head of state and you had to have him as your head of state to be in the Commonwealth. And then that was changed. India was going to announce a Commonwealth, a Republic of 26th of January 1950, or Republic Day. And it was changed so that you don't need to have the British monarch as head of state. You can be a Republican in the Commonwealth. The majority of Commonwealth member states are republics. Only 15 are Commonwealth realms. The other 41 are not. So it really is pointless. And why not dissolve it? Would you care? Am I wrong? Thank you for watching my video. Make sure you subscribe on Patreon. Donate to PayPal, georgecallahan79@gmail.com. Goodbye.